This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's mid-June, 4 months to go before the midterm elections, and Democrats are generally smiling, though President Bush's approval ratings ticked up a bit recently. Both he and his signature policy, the war in Iraq, remain unpopular. His push for an immigration bill looks all but dead. Approval ratings for the Republican-controlled Congress are in the tank. A Republican former official was convicted yesterday in the widening Jack Abramoff scandal, which helps Democrats who campaign against a culture of corruption. And history argues persuasively that the midterm election in a president's second term is always bad news for his party. Added up, and the Democrats see a replay of 1994 when Republicans, led by Newt Gingrich and his Contract with America, seized control of the House of Representatives for the first time in 40 years. Republicans say, not so fast. We are the party of values. We're the party of ideas. We've become the natural party of government. We still control both houses of Congress, which gives us control of the legislative agenda. And with so many safe seats come November, we can concentrate our money and our resources on the relatively few races that might be close. Well, later in the program, a conversation with one of the stars of the new documentary Wordplay. A couple of weeks ago, we looked at Democrats in the midterms. Today, another giant-sized edition of our regular political junkie feature. If you have questions about Republicans' tactics and strategies for the midterm, give us a call. If you voted Republican before, are you going to vote the same way in November? And why or why not? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email address is talk@npr.org. Joining us now, as he does every Wednesday, is NPR political editor Ken Rudin. The latest edition of his Political Junkie column is going up.
It's up as we speak.
Yeah, on our website at npr.org. And he's with us here in Studio 3A. Ken, welcome to the program, Ken.
Thanks, Neil.
Before we talk about the midterms, some of the news of the week, instead of hammering out an immigration bill between the House version and the Senate version, very different versions, though, Congress decided to hold hearings around the country about this thorny issue. This is not the normal way reconciliation works on Capitol Hill.
Well, not Congress, the House, actually,
yes.
Specifically the House. And the House Republicans have never been happy with what the Senate passed, which was more in tune to regarding guest worker programs, and whereas the House version was mostly about border security. And most Republicans care about the border security more than they do about the guest worker program. Dennis Hastert said yesterday, I think it was yesterday, that he goes home and nobody talks about guest worker program. They talk about securing our borders, and most House Republicans feel the same way.
So what is this tactic going to do other than punt this issue?
Well, that's exactly what it does. They want to push it beyond the November 7th elections, perhaps maybe put it into a lame duck post-election session. But what it does is they'll have 7 or 8 congressional hearings in Washington and around the country in July and August. And basically what it does, it gives opponents of immigration a chance to get further inflamed and hold these hearings, because, again, they watched what happened to Brian Bilbray, the Republican congressman in San Diego, California 50th District, last month. And basically what he did was he ran against the Senate immigration bill.
And his president.
And that's a very important point to mention. John McCain was supposed to come in for a fundraiser for him, but he canceled because Bilbray opposes McCain, opposed what the Senate Republicans put together, and supports the House bill. I should say also that even though we talk about the Senate bill that supports guest worker programs, 32 out of the 55 Republicans opposed it.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, now the Republicans are calling it the Ted Kennedy bill. They're not even calling it the Specter-McCain bill anymore.
Right.
So both Republicans in both houses of Congress are not happy with this bill.
The House can schedule those hearings because the Republicans control the House of Representatives. They can schedule whatever bills they want to hear, and the same kind of deal in the United States Senate, where they also control. And that's why both the House and the Senate have been debating the war in Iraq, but strictly, for the most part, on Republican terms.
Absolutely. And, what you said when you led off the program was a very important point, that the war is not popular, the president is not popular, the Republican Congress is not popular. And yet you look at the front pages of all the newspapers, it's the Democrats who seem to be tied in knots over what to do, what kind of language to have about an Iraqi resolution. John Kerry's offering a resolution that's going to be voted on tomorrow in the Senate that puts a date certain for U.S. troops to leave from Iraq. And Democrats are scared to death that Karl Rove and those kind of folks are going to paint the Democratic Party as a cut run party, and they say that's not the way to go. So even though the war is popular, even though the war is so unpopular, the debate seems to be, and the angst seems to be on the Democratic side.
And that shows up in the state of Connecticut, where Joe Lieberman, just a few years ago, the Democratic nominee for Vice President of the United States, is facing a very tough primary challenge, as it turns out.
And it's all about Iraq. I mean, Ned Lamont is a former selectman from the city of Greenwich who really opposes Lieberman for the fact that Lieberman has never apologized or backed down from his vote in 2002 to authorize the president to go to war. He supports the war in Iraq. He has questions about the way the president is, mm-hmm. is conducting the war, but he's still pro-war and he defends that vote. And many Democrats are opposed. And now they're even talking about that if Joe Lieberman should lose the August 8th primary, there's some rumors that he might even run as an independent against a non-entity of a Republican candidate and Lamont, mm-hmm. who would be the Democratic nominee. But that's how scared apparently the Lieberman campaign is on this one.
And one more item before we get to the main news that we're talking about this, and that's Republicans in the midterm elections. And if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255 or email us talk@npr.org. And that is a surprise action in the House of Representatives on the Voting Rights Bill. The Voting Rights Act, of course, was passed in the heyday of the Civil Rights era. It's hailed as a great piece of legislation. It's up for renewal, I think, in 2007.
The end of 2007, yes.
But I think the leadership in both parties said they wanted to get it out this session. And I think it got out of committee in the House 33-1.
That's right.
How did it get hung up?
What happened is that there are still a lot of Southern Republicans who are not do not like the fact that the act as written now states that many states have to go to the Justice Department to get a federal clearance for them to have their voting rights because of past instances of discrimination. Dennis Hastert, the Republican leader, the Speaker, and John Boehner, the Republican leader, majority leader in the House, say, look, they will pass it. They have until the end of 2007 for this to come up, and they will pass it. But there are some conservatives who are very unhappy about being singled out, as they say, and so they want to have some time to cool down the passions. But again, it was pulled. It was not a good sign for the Republican Party, especially in their efforts to win African-American votes to pull the Voting Rights Act, even though it may be very temporary. You know, there are only two people of color in the Republican caucus. It's Bobby Jindal from India, mm-hmm. and John Boehner, who's very tan. But that's all the Republicans I have.
Okay. Let's get a caller on the line. This is Jason. Jason's with us from Statesboro in Georgia.
Hello. I wanted to ask about like a sense of like Republican districts. I know they've done a lot of redistricting down in Georgia when Sonny Perdue took over as governor. And in the district I'm in, down in near Savannah, that's really more competitive now that they've got one of a congressman that had already been in power, and now he's running again, Max Burns. I was wondering to hear your thoughts about a sense of districts.
Well, actually, what's so fascinating about Georgia is that when the Republicans took control of everything, this was with a Democratic-drawn legislature. I mean, it was the Democrats who drew the congressional districts in Georgia, and yet the Republicans really did far better than expected. Now that Sonny Perdue became the first Republican governor since Reconstruction, and now that the Republicans have made major gains in the state legislature, the lines have been drawn to help Republicans. So Max Burns, who was defeated 2 years ago, is out for a rematch. He's trailing in the polls. He's trailing in fundraising. And my guess is, given the national atmosphere for the Republican Party, he'll be hard pressed to win back the seat. But again, you know, we're talking about Republicans in Georgia. Not too many decades ago, that was something that would never even mention, except for the fact that Barry Goldwater won the state in '64.
Mm-hmm. Jason, thanks for the call.
Oh, thank you.
And let's introduce now Adrian Woolridge, the Washington bureau chief for The Economist magazine and co-author of the book The Right Nation: Conservative Power in America. He's with us here in Studio 3A, and nice of you to join us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
And as you look just at basic politics, the issues of the legislation and aside, if you have Republicans holding up the voting rights bill in Congress, and a lot of African Americans newly upset with Republicans after Katrina, and the immigration bill, which if the Republicans were hoping to make inroads amongst the Hispanic community, these are the two largest minority groups in America. What's happening to the Republican coalition?
Absolutely. It's an extraordinary position. You had, not that long ago, Republicans thinking about making major advances amongst Hispanics, major advances amongst African Americans. Indeed, they did make big advances in the 2004 election amongst Hispanics. And I think that Ken Mellman concentrated very heavily just after the 2004 election on wooing black voters. He saw them as a potential voting bloc that could shift at least a little bit.
And if they shift a little bit,
on values issues, absolutely. And what you saw really with Katrina, I think, was the end of any possibility of making a big advance amongst African Americans. And now, again, exactly the same thing with Hispanics. And I think that the card that the Republican, particularly the Republicans in the House, are playing might be a short-term victory for them. I think there's a lot of real worry about the breakdown of law and order, people coming illegally across the border. But as a long-term strategy, it's really, really dangerous.
And do you see this, as many people have said, as a play basically for the Republican base? As they see eroding support in those numbers amongst Republicans, they say, we need these people first.
Well, I mean, I think the White House is very nervous about that sort of strategy because Karl Rove has been particularly keen on expanding the Republican Party and bringing in Hispanic voters. But yes, amongst the congressional Republicans, they're playing to their base, and their base is very preoccupied by the issue of law and order, of a broken border, of people coming across illegally. And I think it's the illegal argument which we'll keep hearing over and over again. Mm-hmm.
And so that's why we have seen just in the past little bit a debate over a gay rights amendment to the United States Constitution, which stood zero chance of being approved. And I guess we're going to see another attempt to have a constitutional amendment on flag burning.
Absolutely bringing up the base, although I think that Mrs. Clinton is not in favor of a constitutional amendment, but she's certainly playing both sides on the values issue over flag burning.
So it's not just a Republican issue, but they're seeking to divide Democrats, as Ken was saying earlier, on the issue of
Absolutely.
Iraq. If you're going to vote against the war, you're voting against support for the troops, as long as we can phrase these resolutions that people are voting on.
I'm not sure that they're seeking to divide the Democrats. They're seeking to expose the differences that are already there amongst the Democrats.
Some divisions amongst the Republicans as well, as we'll talk about when we come back from a break. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. Our guests are NPR political junkie Ken Rudin and Adrian Woolridge, Washington Bureau Chief of The Economist magazine. We'll be speaking with a Republican, with an Instapundit, if you will, when we come back from the break. And later, Representative Ray LaHood will be joining us as well. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The midterm elections are about 4 months away now. Republicans are looking to keep their hold on Congress. Today, a jumbo-sized version of our regular feature, Political Junkie. We'll be talking with Republican Congressman Ray LaHood in a few minutes. Right now, NPR political editor Ken Rudin is with us. Also, Adrian Woolridge, the Washington Bureau Chief of The Economist, and you're invited to join us. If you have questions about Republican strategy or tactics for this fall, if you voted Republican in the past, are you going to do so again in November? Call and tell us why or why not. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And let's get Eric on the line. Eric's calling from Boise, Idaho.
Good afternoon, gentlemen, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question revolves mostly around Karl Rove, and even amongst I'm a Democrat, but even amongst some of the Republicans that I speak to, Mr. Rove seems to be a little greasy, kind of damaged goods, and I'm wondering if you think that I realize he escaped indictment, but he's had his fingers so close to so many dirty things. Do you think he is an asset or a liability at this point?
Ken Rudin, the White House seems to regard him as
president an asset or a liability in campaigns.
All right, that's another question. Ken Rudin, first about Karl Rove.
Well, look, Karl Rove is Karl Rove. I mean, the fact is, I think had he been indicted, and I guess everybody in Washington was expecting an indictment, but had he been indicted, he would have been not only damaged goods, he would have been gone. I mean, obviously, the president could not have had somebody like that formulating 2006 and 2008 election strategy. But having said that, the fact that he's apparently off the hook in this Valerie Plame investigation, nothing is stopping him. Matter of fact, the day it was revealed that he was not going to be indicted, he was in New Hampshire giving a red meat speech to New Hampshire Republicans. So Karl Rove, I think, look. Karl Rove got George Bush where he is today. He probably is responsible, if no one else is, for the Republicans holding Congress as long as they have. They've held it since 1995. And nobody better than Karl Rove can come up with a strategy for 2006. Now, Has he gone to the well too often with these you know, divisive social issues? We'll see, but I think nobody does it better than Karl Rove.
Adrian Wooldridge, on Eric's second question, is the president at this point, for most congressional Republicans, an asset or a liability?
It depends which poll you look at. He went down a long way in the polls. He started to go back up in the polls. So he may become an asset if he gets over 40. He may be an asset. The base, there's a large chunk of the base of the party that really likes this man. And there's always the case that the president has a sort of star power and a fundraising power. He hasn't lost his ability to raise money from Republican donors. So I think he's probably still an asset.
All right. Eric, thanks very much for the question.
Thanks, Neil.
And let's turn now to Glenn Reynolds, publisher of the political blog Instapundit.com and author of the book Army of Davids, How Markets and Technology Empower Ordinary People. He's with us by phone from his home in Knoxville, Tennessee. Nice of you to join us today.
Thanks for having me.
And what are you hearing from people out there in the blogosphere, if you will? Are Republicans considering the president an asset at this point?
You know, there's enormous disappointment among the sort of Republican base, if you read the right-wing serious Republican blogs, though I'd say the disappointment is greater with regard to the Republican Congress than with Bush himself. The two biggest splits are on immigration, where the base is generally much more protectionist and much more anxious to build a fence and close the border than either the administration or the congressional Republicans. And then the other big issue is earmarks and pork, where there's a tremendous amount of anger that Republicans have turned into big spenders after the fashion of Democrats in very short order, and a real sense of betrayal on that.
Yeah, and Adrian Wooldridge, let me bring you in on this. Republicans always say, I think we heard some people saying yesterday, we're the party of ideas. Our opposition is just obstructionist, but we're the party. And other people say, look at their ideas. They're the party of small government and lower taxes. Small government, they're spending like crazy.
The party of ideas, it's the trouble is the ideas don't bear very much relationship to what they've actually been doing, certainly when it comes to policy over spending. And I think this tension between what they claim to stand for and what they've actually been doing as an incumbent Washington inside the Beltway party is leading to an enormous amount of disillusionment amongst activists.
So, Glenn Reynolds, are you hearing an aspect of throw the bums out?
Yeah, a lot of that. There is some talk of a third party candidacy, though that's more for 2008, among some of the more disaffected Republicans on this front. There is a sentiment you see on a lot of the Republican blogs of basically just sitting out the congressional elections, thinking that if some Republicans lose and the Democrats take over the House or the Senate, that maybe it'll convince the Republicans they have to get serious.
Mm-hmm. So reform the party by attrition. Ken Rudin is congressional Republicans have to be quailing at that
Absolutely.
Analysis.
Absolutely. I mean, the fact is, that, you know, it's not just having Nancy Pelosi Speaker of the House. It's also giving the Democrats investigative powers. And while the Democrats insist no impeachment is not on our agenda, but all the hearings that have been held up from being held with Republican control will happen if the Democrats take over the House. So the Republicans could say these guys are not pure enough for me, and I'll sit home in November. But you know, they're inviting doomsday scenario if they had the Democrats control either House of Congress.
Let's get a caller in on this. Tracy. Tracy is calling from Hamburg in New Jersey.
Yeah, hi, Neil. I just want to say I love your show, and you seem to be always fair to both sides of an argument.
Well, thank you very much for that. But go ahead with a question, if you will.
Well, actually, not a question, but I am somebody who usually always votes conservative. And my father's 91. He's always voted conservative. And he thinks that George Bush is the worst president since Herbert Hoover. You know, he hasn't vetoed any spending bills whatsoever. He hasn't addressed the immigration problem. We have an immigration policy. It's called a work program. You know, he never held the people, you know, he created the biggest branch of government called Homeland Security, and he never held the people accountable. The FBI and the CIA were supposed to protect us, do their job. He never held them accountable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't think there's any difference between right now the Republicans or the Democrats. I mean,
so when it comes to a vote in your congressional race in your district next fall, are you going to be voting against the president, essentially?
I may actually vote for the Green Party. I don't know enough about the candidate right now, but I've always voted conservative, and I'm just, you know, I think we need something new in Washington than what we've had.
But you would still vote, presumably, for young Tom Kaine, the Republican candidate?
No, I would not.
No?
No, at this point, I would not. I'm just so disappointed. I think that they've been given the reins and they haven't done the job, so they should be taken out.
And Glenn Reynolds, is Tracy one of the kinds of voices you're hearing?
Oh, absolutely. I'm hearing a lot of that. And, you know, the hope of the Republicans is that people will be mad now and by November will change their minds. But I have to say, I do a podcast with my blog, and we interviewed Ken Melman, the RNC chair, and I just felt that he was either in denial or just clueless about how deep the anger in the base is going, because he just really didn't seem to get it. And they're at huge risk. And, yeah, you know, the Republican base wouldn't like it if there were all these Democratic investigations into the White House, but I can't help but think that the Republican Party would like it a lot less. And I just don't understand why they seem so out of touch on this.
Tracy, thanks very much for the call. For a different view on this, we're joined now by Congressman Ray LaHood, a Republican from Illinois. He's with us by phone from his office here in Washington, D.C. And nice to have you on the program, Congressman.
Good afternoon. Thank you for inviting me.
And as Republicans in Congress look ahead to November, are people you're talking to upbeat?
Well, look, at what our leadership is telling our members is, if you haven't had a tough race in the last few years, you need to take a poll in your district. You need to see how you're doing. You need to take it seriously. Rather than having maybe 12 or 15 incumbent members our leadership is looking at, they're looking more at maybe 35 or 40 races, people who believe they're in a safe district, but, you know, really haven't had a tough opponent, and they need to check things out. And so the answer is, we're not taking anything for granted, and people need to kind of look over their shoulder and make sure things are okay in their district because of some of the corruption issues. Because of some of the other hot-button issues like the war, like immigration, people need to check out and find out how they're doing in their district.
Congressman Ken Rudin here. We had Tom Reynolds, the chairman of the National Republican Congressional Committee, on the show a month or two ago, and he said that he was not that worried because these elections will be decided, local elections. It will not be a national theme. Are the members really saying that? Do they really believe that?
Well, look, a lot of elections will be local. I think if you look at the Brian Bilbray election, it was not about the culture of corruption.
Again, the California 50th. Go ahead.
The California 50th, where Duke Cunningham is now serving 8 years, 4 months in jail, was thrown out of office because he took $2.3 million from defense contractors. Brian Bilbray won that race on one issue and one issue only, immigration. In central Illinois that I represent, that won't be that big a hot-button issue. It may be the war. The answer is that in these elections, a national issue could turn out to be a local issue, but trying to nationalize this on one or two things, I think, will not work. People consider their congressman sort of the mayor of their district, and they're as concerned about traffic congestion, and they're as concerned about roads, and they're as concerned about potholes as maybe some people on the border states are about immigration. So in a sense, Ken, I think some of these, the majority of these, will be, local issues.
One of the races in which Democrats seem to have a shot is in your home state, in Illinois, the 6th District, where Democrat Tammy Duckworth, an Iraq War veteran, is vying for what's currently a Republican-held seat. As you look at that race, do you think that that's going to be a bellwether?
I think that the Tammy Duckworth race is the poster child race for or against the war. Tammy Duckworth is a war hero. She's a double amputee. She's never run for Congress. She doesn't live in that district. But Rahm Emanuel, who is also from Illinois and the DCCC chair, and the Democrats are going all out to have money funneled into that district. She's got over $1 million, and it's an open seat. It's been held by a Republican for a long time, but it is the poster child for the war. And if she wins, people are going to say, you know, it was about the war. If she loses, people are going to say it was about other local issues.
If she wins, Congressman, if she wins, do you see that a possibility of the Democrats taking the House, or you don't see the 15 seats going down?
I don't see at this point the 15 seats, but, you know, I'm listening to people like Charlie Cook and others who analyze these races district by district, and as they analyze them district by district, the Democrats are going to lose some, we're going to lose some, we'll probably end up with 223 members, and, that's 10 less than we have now because we have 232. I believe we'll be the majority party. We're not going to be the majority party at 232 members. We're not going to be the majority party in the Senate with 55 senators. We'll probably end up with maybe 52. If you look at the analysis district by district, and there is no political tsunami, which was what the Democrats would like, I think we'll be in the majority.
As looking a little bit further down the road, some of the things, the immigration bill is being put out for hearings that could delay it until after the election. This is not going to endear a lot of Republicans to the Hispanics in their districts. There is continued disappointment among the African-American community post-Katrina. Now the voting rights bill has been held up while Republican concerns are addressed in the House of Representatives. Down the road, these minority groups are going to be key to Republican prospects.
Well, in some districts they will be, but let's face it, these hearings on immigration are a way to kill the bill. It's a great disappointment to me because I'm one of those who believes we ought to have a comprehensive bill. I mean, I voted for border security. I support border security. But we have to account for 12 million people that live in this country. And to put off these issues, I think, will be some source of irritation to Hispanic voters or to African-American voters in the case of the voting rights. But for the vast majority of Republicans, it's not going to have a great deal of influence on whether they win or lose because many of their districts are districts where immigration is a lot more important and some of these issues where they, you know, are not going to swing a district.
We're having an expanded version of our Political Junkie segment this week. We're talking about Republicans in the midterm elections with NPR political editor Ken Rudin, Adrian Wooldridge of The Economist magazine, Instapundit Glenn Reynolds, and with Congressman Ray LaHood of Illinois. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Congressman LaHood, as you look ahead toward your seat, you feel comfortable this November?
In my own election?
Yeah.
Well, I do. I have the same opponent as I had last time, and I won with 70% of the vote. I go home every weekend. I work my district very hard. We haven't had a Democrat from my district in Congress since 1918, and we have a rich tradition of Everett Dirksen, Bob Michael, Harold Velde, it's a pretty good district, and I work it hard, and I don't take anything for granted, I believe I'll do well.
It's funny. Ken and I were just talking about Ray Velde earlier
Harold
today.
Velde,
Harry
yes,
Velde.
Yes, yes.
Ken Rudin is a political junkie in the truest and best sense of the word.
I think that's very true. I had a conversation not too long ago with Martin Forrester, the former member of Congress from Texas, and he said that in 1994, the Democrats didn't even know things were bad until like August, September. Do you think the Republican Party knows, the members know what they face in this year?
Well, I go back to what I said before. I think when Tom Reynolds stood up several months ago and said, if you believe you are a safe incumbent, take a poll, look over your shoulder, find out what people are saying, and don't take anything for granted. The fact that he said that several months ago, I think, was a recognition and a wake-up call for all of us that we need to make sure things are okay in our district. And I think that was not the case in 94. Plus, the other thing is, in 94, we had a whole agenda, the contract with America. The Democrats don't have an agenda. They can't even figure out what their agenda is. They don't even know what their 5 points are at this point. The contract with America was developed well before this period in 94. So I think people realize they got to pay attention to things.
Democrats clearly ran against or away from Bill Clinton, an unpopular president in 1994. Do you advise Republicans to do the same with President Bush this year?
Well, I think if people want to raise money, they better invite the president. If people want to raise money, they'll invite the vice president. And these guys can raise enormous amounts of money. As a matter of fact, the president's going into Illinois on July 7th for Judy Bart Topinka, our gubernatorial candidate. I think for raising money purposes, the president and vice president will be invited in. Maybe on issues like immigration and other things, he won't be so welcome.
Broadly, do you expect Republicans to try to build the party this year in congressional races, an equivalent to the tactic that we're hearing on the Democratic side from Howard Dean, or focus a lot of money and a lot of resources on those races that are competitive that will tell the difference about who controls Congress?
I think Tom Reynolds and our Republican organization that funds these races will try and take care of at least 35 incumbents and then maybe try and pick up another 12. And as I said, I believe a year from right now we'll be the majority party in the House with about, you know, hopefully maybe 223, 224 members. In the Senate, I think we'll be at 52 or 53. That's my guess right now.
Congressman LaHood, we hope to have you back on after the election and see how your addition works out.
Anytime. Thank you very much.
Ray LaHood, a Republican from Illinois, and he joined us today by phone from his office here in Washington, D.C. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll take a couple of more calls about the Republican prospects, their tactics for this coming midterm elections with Ken Rudin, Adrian Wooldridge, and Glenn Reynolds. And then, we'll be having a special interview with the star of a new documentary, Wordplay. I'm not sure star is appropriate. Back after the break. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. But right now, Republican politics, strategy, and the midterm elections with our own political junkie, NPR political editor Ken Rudin. You can read his latest column at our website, npr.org. And our guests are Adrian Wooldridge of The Economist magazine and Glenn Reynolds, publisher of the political blog Instapundit.com. And let's get another caller on the line. This is David. David calling from Fort Wayne in Indiana.
Yeah, hi, Neil. Glad to talk to you.
Glad you called. Go ahead.
Here's a perspective from flyover country. I'm a Republican, not a far-right Republican, more of a centrist Republican. And I'm in Dan Quayle's former district, so we're a red part of a red state out here. And one of the things I remember when I watched George Bush debate Al Gore that really stuck with me were a couple of comments. One was that he said he was not a nation builder, and this was in the context of a question about our deployment of troops to Haiti. And that really resonated with me. I thought that it was a good idea to use the military appropriately, but not to string the military out and get it involved with missions that were problems that were really beyond the capabilities of the military. And then the other thing I remember is him saying very pointedly that he's a fiscal conservative. So now here I am 6 years later, and I'm wondering what happened. You know, we've sent these folks to Washington, and they've got us involved in this protracted war. And then in addition to that, they've spent like a bunch of drunken sailors.
And will that change your vote for the congressional candidate in Mr. Quayle's old district come November?
I don't even know who the Democrat who's running against our congressman is. His name is Mark Sauter. He's a five-term Republican, and he's run very strong campaigns. He campaigns well, and I think his political philosophy aligns well with the district in general. He beat a fairly popular former Democratic mayor, a 14 multi-term mayor named Paul Helmke last time. So I don't think he's in danger. However, I think that if he was, he's the canary in the mine shaft.
Well, Glenn Reynolds, David is suggesting, in many races, though there may be Republican anger, it's not going to matter.
Well, that's right. I mean, my local Republican congressman is, I think, running unopposed, and if he's not, he might as well be. He inherited his seat from his father, essentially, and I don't think he could blast him out. And, of course, the way districts are gerrymandered in a lot of states, that's going to be true in a lot of places for both parties. But I think that the Republicans are maybe counting on that a little too much.
Okay. Thanks very much for the call, David.
A comment, Neil.
If you could make it quickly.
Okay, I read your book, Play Ball. I loved it. Anybody who likes minor league baseball ought to read Neil's book. It's a real joy.
Well, thank you very much for that. I will just point out that the title of the book was Play by Play, but thank you for that,
right,
David.
Bye,
appreciate
play.
It. Bye-bye.
Glenn, Ken Rudin here. I have a question to ask you, too, because it seemed like in this immigration bill, and you see how House Republicans are so angry with the president and angry with the Senate-passed bill, The supposed front runner, and I hate that word, but the supposed front runner for 2008 among the Republican Party is a fellow by the name of John McCain, who strongly supports this Senate bill, this worker guest worker program. What are you hearing from the rank and file on McCain in 2008?
McCain's tried to cozy up to the Republican base. He's never been very popular with them. I think that the immigration stuff has hurt him again. He sort of won a lot of points on the war, but then kind of threw them away again on the immigration. To the credit of people in both parties, I think they're both actually trying to do what they think is right rather than what's politically expedient, which is unusual on this front. But I think that it's just explosively damaging for the Republicans. And frankly, it's, open immigration is not very popular among most Democratic voters either. So it's actually an interesting case of both parties doing things that are at odds with their base, but I think it's going to hurt the Republicans more.
Hmm. Adrian Woolridge, let me ask you a broader question, and that is the whole idea of Karl Rove as he came in. He saw this as a transformational opportunity, the chance to build a Republican majority that would endure past this administration, indeed stretch out for the foreseeable future. Do you see, as the president, the Republican-led Congress are so unpopular at the moment, and of course all of this really hinging much of it on the war in Iraq and spending, as we hear on the Republican side as well, do you see that changing?
I think the what is interesting about the current situation, I think, is given all the problems with the Republicans, the fact that they've betrayed their base on key questions such as spending, the fact that the war has gone not as it might have been intended to go. The interesting thing is how we still presume, I think, that the Republicans will just about hold on. And I think most people think that if there were a matchup, let's say, between John McCain and Hillary Clinton, John McCain would win in a walk. So I think it's still the stronger of the two parties. And I think given what's gone on, it's remarkable it should be the stronger of the two parties. And again, if you look at a lot of the underlying things that went on in 2004, the Republicans won 97 out of the 100 fastest growing districts in the country. It still seems to be that the base of the Democratic Party is in big towns, which are declining, amongst unmarried people who by definition, people who don't have children who by definition are in some sense declining. And the Republican Party is a stronger party when you get to the world of Applebee's and Home Depots and McMansion. That's a pretty solidly Republican area. So I see that this is still the stronger of the two parties, and even having played its cards very badly or having been unlucky or having made major miscalculations, however you want to look at it, they ought to be weaker than they are now.
I wonder, Glenn Reynolds, do you agree? I mean, we saw demographic figures reinforcing Adrian's point earlier today.
Oh, totally. I agree. And I think that the Republican salvation is, in fact, that they only have to run against the Democrats. And the Democrats have a lot of their own problems. This is like the World Series if it were played between single-A teams. I mean, both parties are not really performing to a very high level of skill here. So that makes it both more frustrating and, I guess, more interesting in a way.
More interesting, Ken, for sure.
Absolutely. And the fact that the Democrats still don't know how to deal with the war in Iraq is just startling, given the numbers. The fact that is a front-page story in the New York Times today, that John Kerry's proposal to have a date-certain exit from Iraq is really giving the Democrats heartache. Republicans all along, the question was, how do you get out of Iraq? How do you win in Iraq? How do you win in the war on terror? And yet, all the onus seems to be on the Democrats and their internal goings-on.
Ken Rudin, our political junkie, will be back with us next Wednesday. You can read his column, Political Junkie, at NPR.org. Thanks very much for being with us. Adrian Woolridge, Washington Bureau Chief of The Economist magazine, co-author of The Right Nation, Conservative Power in America. Nice to speak with
you
again.
Very much.
And Glenn Reynolds, a law professor at the University of Tennessee and publisher of the political blog Instapundit.com. And thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And when we come back, well, who knows what's going to happen.